It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good evening. This is May Brussel. This is Dialogue Conspiracy number 308, and it's February the 12th, 1978. The article that I did for Globe Midnight Magazine is on the stands right now. It doesn't give you much notice because I think they go off in about 2 days. But in case you haven't read it, you can get that copy, or you can order it from Globe if you miss it. It's the February 14th issue of Midnight Magazine. The article is about Gerald Ford being an informer for the FBI on the Warren Commission, and they advertised and headlined it as such: Ex-President Gerald Ford's Secret Role, FBI Stoolie, Ford Spied for the FBI in the JFK Probe. The important thing about this article was that I provided Midnight with the information to back up the new FBI reports that have come out saying that Gerald Ford informed them on the commission, with a document from Washington, D.C., also saying that Gerald Ford knew right from the very beginning that Lee Harvey Oswald worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. And they even identified him by some number, which is kind of strange on the books, but it seems that the Warren Commission, as of January the 22nd, 1964, had this identification of a number 110669. Gerald Ford seemed to have worked for the CIA all the years that he was in Washington as a member of the House of Representatives and later on the Warren Commission. And the association of Lee Harvey Oswald with the FBI and his work with the FBI was only one part of his job in covering up for the Warren Commission. I had provided Midnight with a lot of material when they asked me for this story, and of course they only have space for two or three thoughts, and they put them in there. It isn't the whole story of Gerald Ford spying, and I have talked about it from time to time on Dialogue Conspiracy, and we'll go into it more. But if you want that issue and you want to get a hold of some of the articles I'm doing, you can get Midnight this week. If you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, because I just don't have time to address and mail out all of these envelopes, I will send you a source list of books and documents that I refer to on the program. I have a new revised list, such as the Gemstone File, the Torbett document, the records of the animal mutilations, the Buckley family story, the articles that I have written, a new study on an audit of the gold reserves by a listener up in Oregon with the price and the address and the links of Interpol and the Nazis to the Justice Department through Freedom. I have a list here of Conspiracy Digest, and from time to time on KLRB I give an individual address to write and some information. But I have a sheet made up now for convenience if you want a list of the newest material and where to get it on these various subjects that I'm talking about. And I think I'll keep doing that every 10 or 12 weeks, give the sources of the information of the programs on Dialogue Conspiracy so that you can continue into those subjects that interest you, because I get letters and phone calls all the time. And this way you can find your own sources there. They're listed, and look up some of the facts that I have mentioned and get much more, because we're limited in time here to what we can do. I spoke with the producer of the Howard Hughes mystery, that movie, and those of you who are not familiar with what transpired last summer on Dialogue Conspiracy, I did talk about a movie that I had helped make. It was a million-dollar production put together with Broderick Crawford and Hope Holliday, Cameron Mitchell, called The Hughes Mystery. And I had the opening scenes and closing scenes of that movie. This was my first movie, Hollywood movie, that I had made with regards to the research. I've been on television, of course, and radio a lot. And we did the filming, and then the film clips were held in limbo, and the producer later said that parts of the scenes that we did, including my correspondence with FBI Director Clarence Kelly, were missing. And then nothing more was said. The movie just stayed shelved, and I assumed that the movie would never get out. The producer did tell me when I was in Los Angeles this last week that the Summa people, the Howard Hughes organization, had contacted him, that they confirmed that the FBI and the Summa and the CIA all had the soundtrack of the movie that was made, and that they were familiar with every line or the parts in it. they didn't buy him out. I thought they would give him $2 million and just shelve the movie. But Manuel Zecina said, no, they didn't make an offer. I said, take it if you can, because it's not a great movie. It's just a sort of a put-on movie, but it's interesting. And I think the parts that I have in there that add the reality and the hard facts would shake a lot of people. I hope they would. He has international distribution. I don't even know if it'll show in this country. I know it'll go worldwide, countries around the world. But the movie is not shelved, and we're going to refilm the scenes, and I'm going to do them with an actor, which I wanted to do in the first place instead of just by myself. And a man who just made a movie about the Central Intelligence Agency that's playing now is going to do the part with me, I believe. As soon as it's confirmed and filmed, I'll tell you more about it. And I'll be going down there in a week or two. So the Howard Hughes mystery is going to be finished, completed, and released. And that's interesting because last year was very frustrating. Almost all the projects that I did were shelved. The interviews, the articles about me, the articles I wrote, the movie. There seemed to be a cork on the bottle. And then after 1978, when January came of this year, and I was very optimistic that things would break, there seems to be a total reverse now for some reason. I don't know why. And now I'm involved in seven or eight interesting projects that I'll share with you. But I think for those of you that followed the suppression of that movie and what happened, you'll be glad to know that it is going to come out, and we'll be working on it in a few weeks. The CBS National Television had their annual piece of junk, historical junk, this last week. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that in terms of facts more than just name-calling. They had their movie about Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald. And what CBS doesn't lie about, they exclude, and I can give you just one example of the way they exclude information that is available to them when they make these movies. And you can't say that it's just that they didn't have the facts, because as soon as I heard that they were going to make the movie, I offered them documents and facts, but they closed the doors and refused to accept them. If you saw the CBS movie on Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby, there were a lot of scenes of Jack Ruby swimming in his swimming pool, going back and forth, which is quite refreshing, particularly in November. It's really cold back there. But they don't tell you at the time that he swims the address of his apartment. He shared an apartment, the same swimming pool, and the same apartment owner and buildings right across from each other, facing each other, with a man named George Bowie, who was the confidant of Lee and Marina Oswald, who set up the meetings of Lee and Marina with the CIA agents in the Dallas-Fort Worth area through the conduit of the Greek Orthodox Church. George Bowie bought Marina Oswald over 100 dresses to keep her pacified and satisfied in the interim when they lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area before Lee Harvey Oswald went to New Orleans and then came back to Texas. Bowie lived in that same apartment, and the one pool they were sharing possibly could be used by this man who was very close to the Oswald. They also showed Jack Ruby at the Dallas Times-Herald building the night after John Kennedy was killed, or the early morning hours, about 2 in the morning. And he was on a skateboard, and he shows this young woman how to skate, and he twists. He calls it a twist board. And it's a very innocent little scene of Jack Ruby being quite frivolous. His nightclub's closed, and he's demonstrating for the Dallas Times-Herald the skateboard. Well, how important was that particular twist board to the assassination of John Kennedy? It was important to the Warren Commission. I have a letter here written by Leon D. Hubert, Jr. and Bert W. Griffin. Those were attorneys for the Warren Commission. And they wrote to the chief counsel of the Warren Commission, J. Lee Rankin, on May the 14th, 1964. And I'm quoting, it says, Jack Ruby has always looked for ways. He's a person who looked for money-making sidelines. Just 2 months prior to November 22nd, before John Kennedy was killed, Jack Ruby spent considerable time promoting an exercise board known as the twist board. The twist board was manufactured by Plastilite Engineering, a Fort Worth manufacturer of oil field equipment with poor credit references, but they worked for the oil companies. We know of no sales of this item by Jack Ruby that he was demonstrating. We don't know if any twist boards were ever manufactured to be sold. The possibility remains that the twist board was a front for other illegal enterprises. This is from two members of the Warren Commission who tried to check who made the twist board. They identified it as a Plastilite engineer, not by name. And because they're not for sale, and Ruby was noticeably on this twist board, they thought it was a front for illegal enterprises. Well, in the book Forgive My Grief that Penn Jones Jr. wrote, He has four books, series, Forgive My Grief, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Volume 2, on page 117, he goes a little further into the front, the Plastilite company that Jack Ruby had demonstrated with his Pacific twist board. Penn Jones wrote that Peter Gregory, a person very familiar to Lee and Maureen Oswald, lived at 3513 Dorothy Lane in Fort Worth, Texas. Now, Peter Gregory is a man who was accused by Marguerite Oswald immediately after the assassination as having some part in the conspiracy to kill John Kennedy and to be working with Marina Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald's widow, in this conspiracy, if not the killing, at least in the cover-up. Now, Peter Gregory was a well-known engineer, oil engineer, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Gregory made contact with Lee and Marina Oswald in June of 1962. That was as soon as they came home from the Soviet Union. But he never explained to the Warren Commission how he got their name and address, but he made contact and also made introductions for them in the oil engineering community in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. When Lee Oswald came home from Russia, he was dictating to his secretary, Mrs. Bates, notes about experiences in the USSR, and Mrs. Bates was a witness at the Warren Commission and said she thought by the notes that he was dictating that Oswald was an agent for the government and that the purpose of her typing up these notes was to give to an oil engineer. There were two oil engineers that Lee Harvey Oswald saw immediately that belonged to the anti-communist group, the extreme right-wing oil crowd in Texas. One was George DeMorenschild and the other was this Peter Gregory. Now, Gregory, this petroleum engineer, lived just one house away, one house removed from Richard Lloyd Adams, who lived at 3521 Dorothy Lane. And Mr. Adams happens to be the man who manufactured that twist board that Jack Ruby was promoting. He's the president of the Plastilite company that the Warren Commission didn't put by name, but who just lived one house removed from Mr. Gregory, a witness before the Warren Commission, who'd been charged with allegations made by Marguerite, was part of the cover-up, who was with Marina Oswald at the end of Six Flags and escorting her as soon as John Kennedy was killed. Mr. Gregory lived next door to Mr. Adams, the manufacturer of this twist board that Ruby was promoting. Now, Adams had two friendships, this man that wasn't named by the Warren Commission, at least in this document. He was close, very close, for a long time with Peter Gregory, the friends of Lee and Marina Oswald, and he was very close to Jack Ruby, who was to soon kill Lee Harvey Oswald. The Warren Commission stated the Plastilite Company was a front, a dummy front, for other purposes than selling twist boards. The twist boards, some of them were stacked in the Plastilite Company, according to Penn Jones, and Jack Ruby would visit with Mr. Adams to get one, but no one else seems to have bought any. There's no record of anyone else having bought them. Now, Jack Ruby visited the home of Lloyd Adams, this person who, again, lives next door to Mr. Gregory, Lee and Marina's friends, and he brought with him a man named Larry Crayford, C-R-A-F-A-R-D. Larry Crayford came to work for Jack Ruby at the Carousel Club just shortly before the assassination of John Kennedy, about the same time that Jack Ruby was at Mr. Adams picking up this strange twist board. Now, this Larry Crayford has been named. There's allegations coming out soon by Jim Garrison, the district attorney in New Orleans, alleging that one of the assassins at Dealey Plaza was this Larry Crayford, who was brought to the home of Lloyd Adams, that Larry Crayford, Jack Ruby's employee, was also at the home of this Mr. Adams. Now, Lloyd Adams, the owner of this Plastilite company, who was familiar with Mr. Gregory, Lee and Marina's friend, who was familiar with Jack Ruby, and familiar with Larry Crawford, gave a telephone number to Larry Crayford, who's later going to be named as possibly one of the assassins, and he said, give this number to Mike Shore only, a man by the name of Mike Shore. And the number was the message that brought Melvin Belli into the trial to defend Jack Ruby after he shot Lee Harvey Oswald. Does this sound complicated? Maybe it does. Maybe I can simplify it for you. One more time. Jack Ruby, the night John Kennedy was killed, was making himself conspicuous at the Dallas Times Herald for some unknown reason, using a twist board and showing how it works and demonstrating it. The twist board was manufactured by an oil engineer by the name of Richard Lloyd Adams, who lived in Fort Worth, Texas. The Adams Company made pipes and fittings for the oil industry, and there are many, many persons involved in the Kennedy assassination who are linked to the oil industry by coincidence or otherwise, owners of oil companies, engineers, attorneys, and so forth, that were part of the cover-up, at least, if not the planning of the assassination. Peter Gregory, the close friend of Lee and Marina Oswald, was a longtime friend who lived next door to Richard Adams, who was at his home and knew him well. And Jack Ruby, who was to kill Lee Harvey Oswald, was also a friend of Adams. And it was a combination of Jack Ruby, Adams, and Larry Crayford together that were at Adams' apartment. Adams gave Crayford a telephone number to be passed to a Mike Shore. The result was that at a future date, a few months later, John Kennedy would be killed. 14 years later, I learned that Larry Crayford is a suspect in the case. Larry Crayford is at the house of this Mr. Adams. As soon as John Kennedy was killed, Gregory was the first person to escort Marina Oswald and take care of her at the Inn of Six Flags and separate her from Ruth and Michael Payne, and Marguerite Oswald step right in there with the Secret Service and take care of Marina Oswald. And 2 days later, Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald, and no local attorney could represent him. The attorneys that wanted to were pushed away, and the only attorney that was allowed to come in was this Melvin Belli, whose name, according to Penn Jones, was given to Larry Crayford through a name of Mike Shore. So the little story of the twist board on CBS could have been clarified a little more. For example, I've had the document about the commission thinking the twist board was a dummy front or an illegal operation of some kind for about 6 years. And Penn Jones' book, Forgive My Grief, number 2, has been out for about 6 years. So CBS could go to some of the researchers for these facts and information. And of course they don't. They want to show a very innocent kind of activity of Jack Ruby frivolously trying to lose an ounce on the skateboard that early morning after Kennedy was killed. Well, there's going to be this evening, it's going on right now, and it'll be Monday and Tuesday night of this week, another NBC cover-up this time. That was CBS. This is NBC's turn. It was ABC doing the four-hour show on Jack Ruby or Lee Harvey Oswald earlier in the year. Now we're blessed with the NBC story, and this is this called the Martin Luther King story. And I understand from the reviews of it, the people that have seen it, that in spite of the flaws and errors, you'll still understand a lot more about Reverend Martin Luther King than you did before, which is more than I can say about CBS or ABC shedding any light on Lee Harvey Oswald. Terrence O'Flaherty in the San Francisco Chronicle, February the 11th, had a comment about news media television in these historical documents. O'Flaherty said, in quotes, "There is a growing doubt about the combination of commercial entertainment and historic fact in recent documentary dramas of this sort. The men who make them are not historians. They are showmen posting as historians. Therefore, the generation which says, 'I saw it on TV, it must be true,' may be in need of labels similar to those of the cigarette ads that warn, 'Documentary viewing may be dangerous to your healthy idea of history.' Smart folks are able to tell the difference by themselves, and others, like determined cigarette smokers, simply don't give a damn." I think that's interesting, the comparison to cigarette smokers, because knowing that it could cause death or cancer, and they continue smoking. And I feel that being ignorant of the facts of these political assassinations and the robbery of our electoral process through murder is going to bring the same kind of deaths, only much greater than the cancer incidents. By staying ignorant, you're going to begin to feel the pain of this ignorance in a few years when it really comes down, because so many people have allowed these facts and misinformation to go that the killers are really getting stronger every day. And the big problem is that the killing of John Kennedy 14 years ago isn't over, or Reverend Martin Luther King. The same people are touring the country, giving lectures, controlling the government agencies, and they're still in power. O'Flaherty said, "Hosea Williams complained that Mr. King is portrayed in this documentary as weak and an indecisive leader. The people around him were ignored. people who did nothing but carry his baggage have important roles in the TV movie. Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth is shown holding Reverend Martin Luther King when he died, where actually Reverend Shuttlesworth was in Cincinnati. The TV movie has him with Shuttlesworth because the producer, Abby Mann, didn't like Robert Abernathy. So he changed the character to give a bigger part to the role of Reverend Shuttlesworth, that particular actor. Flaherty says Mark Lane researched the movie. He helped Abby Mann, and he agrees that some of the criticism is true, that Abby Mann didn't like Robert Abernathy, the man actually at King's side, and played up the other role. O'Flaherty said, for my personal encounters with Abby Mann in regard to other films, he also made Judgment in Nuremberg, which incidentally was passed off as a good movie, and I felt it covered up greatly the role of the Nazis and the pain that they caused in World War II. It showed certain individual characters and how their lives were affected, and that was good, but that certainly wasn't the bottom line, and there was more to Nuremberg. And Abby Mann and Leon Jaworski and Chief Justice Powell all had a part in this Nuremberg cover-up, and they continue to cover up. That's their role. They do it well, and Mark Lane has helped with this movie, and you know that I've made allegations about him. I'll do a little more on that later, but Flaherty mentions him by name as admitting that this movie is not entirely accurate. Now, Flaherty said, Abby Mann in other films that he's written or supervised comes across as a super salesman for his own viewpoints, as a showman who might rearrange the facts to make a more dramatic statement. And I wonder if researchers who work hard on a movie such as this, such as Mark Lane, help Abby Mann write a story that isn't true, why don't they have press conferences and expose Abby Mann for what he's doing? Mark Lane had a press conference, which I attended last week in Los Angeles, charging Mr. Robert Blakey of covering up for the Select Committee on Assassinations in Washington, D.C., the real information about the Kennedy and King murders. But nothing is said about Abby Mann. If I were working on a project with somebody and they hired me because of my research, and then they changed the story one little bit or covered it up and changed history around, I wouldn't say to people, yes, I know they covered it up, and take my money in helping with the movie. I would expose them or get paid for the part I did and expose them for what they did. I wouldn't sit on it if it was covered up any more than I kept quiet when the Hughes movie was suppressed or when We Magazine suppressed articles, which they're now getting out. I talk about them, and I think that it is dangerous to your health to pass these stories up and let them be given as fables. They're not true, and each generation is whitewashed with a TV documentary, whatever their favorite station is, ABC, NBC, CBS. And they'll let that rest till about two more years, till the kids get a little smarter. They say each generation, or it used to be 25 years, is now every 10 or 5 years. So we'll be due for another series of television shows in about 4 years from now. But that should do it for now if the kids are watching or believe it anymore. I did go to the press conference, as I say, at the headquarters in Century City of Larry Flynt's office. I was down there doing a lot of other work, and I just happened to see this. I caught the press conference and challenged Mark Lane on why he said that the committee's covering up now when they were always covering up. When Senator Schweiker was there, there was cover-up. When Richard A. Sprague was heading the committee, there was a cover-up. And I don't see any difference. I don't see a reason to call a press conference now on the cover-up if you can't send documents to these people earlier. Or Henry Gonzalez, who washed, sent to the dry cleaner the clothing of John Connally after the assassination of John Kennedy, was heading a committee. I thought that he should be the first person to explain the chain of command of the vital destruction of evidence. I don't think the committee back there was ever set up to get to the truth, and they just kept changing heads till people gave up energy, and the old team was fired, and a new team was brought in. And now Mr. Blakey has admitted, I believe, that he's worked 25 years with Richard Helms and with the CIA, and he's in charge of the committee. But what else is new? The CIA's been in charge of the investigation of the assassination of John Kennedy for the last 14 years, at least the official investigations. But I brought home a copy of the Los Angeles Free Press. You can write down there and get them. The price is $1.50. It's an entire issue with the first article of Mark Lane, now that he's working for Larry Flynt. And I brought home the copy, And the front page has an article, and next week I'll continue on part two of this show of the article written by Mark Lane for Larry Flint on the Kennedy assassination. And I cross-filed very carefully this first article so that we could get into specifics on the kind of work that's going to be published by Larry Flint now that he's taken over the Free Press. The headline, of course, on the Los Angeles Free Press says, JFK Murder Solved. Now, they're very smart. They didn't date this issue, so it can be handed out 5 years from now, and it may be true. I've never seen a publication that had no date on it of any kind. It has nothing at all. It just says LA Free Press. It's published in Columbus, Ohio. They even ran out of them because there was a snowstorm there. The Los Angeles printers and the fellows there are not putting it out in Los Angeles. It comes out of Ohio. And the headline says, JFK Murder Solved. The killing coordinated by the CIA. And then the byline is Gerald Ford spied on the Warren Commission, and then the media, Time, Life, and New York Times are involved in the cover-up. Well, for any researchers, that isn't new information, but it's new for me that the killing was coordinated by the CIA. I take issue with the first headline. First of all, I don't think the murder is solved at all. It's far from solved. And the second point is it was not necessarily coordinated by the CIA. I've maintained all along that the allegations that it was coordinated by the DISC, Defense Industry Security Command, out of Muscle Shoals, Alabama, with agents of Division 5 of the FBI and the CIA, is more accurate. And I think that persons from the Pentagon have deleted their involvement in this. I can't say who is infiltrated from the Pentagon in this cover-up, but I say that to name or finger the CIA is being responsible, and then saying the case is solved. I can't believe how it would be solved, and Larry Flint just put $2 million in as a reward for somebody who would bring this case to trial. If it were solved, Flint would be handing out his $1 million reward, and we would read that in that issue. The last sentence of the article, I'll jump from the headline to the last sentence of Mark Lane's article, because this I have never believed or thought a minute. He said, in quotes, "The documents now available answer many questions about the conduct of frightened little men who ran the Warren Commission. They were afraid to search for truth because they thought incorrectly it would lead to," he implies through the article, "a KGB conspiracy. If the CIA personnel did not plan the assassination of Kennedy, why did they link Lee Harvey Oswald to the assassination falsely, as it turned out, almost 2 months before it took place?" And the bulk of the article is about a document that the Warren Commission received just when they started their work, January 22nd, 1964. The Warren Commission got a document from the Central Intelligence Agency saying that Lee Harvey Oswald had been to the Soviet embassy in Mexico City, and that he had been to the Cuban embassy in Mexico City, and that one of the persons that he had talked with at the Mexican embassy headed assassination teams. And it's the allegations of Mark Lane in this article that so intimidated the Warren Commission to think that Oswald had talked to a KGB man in Mexico without any proof of it, that they allowed bullets at Parkland Hospital by the FBI to be concealed, that John Kennedy's brain matter would be locked up and missing, that the National Archives would be locked up for 75 years, that the trajectory of the bullet, famous bullet 399, wouldn't be examined closely, that evidence could be forged and falsified, and Oswald's non-existent diary used as an example of his insanity. I've never, ever in 14 years research heard anybody refer to John J. McCloy, the head of the World Bank, a lawyer for Rockefeller Chase Manhattan, Alan Dulles, the head of an attorney for the Rockefellers Chase Manhattan, the head of the CIA. I've never heard of these men. Mr. Richard Russell, senator from Georgia, watchdog of the CIA. Gerald Ford in the House of Representatives was on a watchdog committee of the CIA. These men, one became the president, one the head of the World Bank, the Chief Justice of the United States. I've never heard of these men as frightened little men. These are world movers. These are powers. And to think that they were intimidated by one piece of paper is so outrageous that I do want to spend next week for a half hour, unless there's some other shaking news, on this entire copy, this article in the Los Angeles Free Press, because I don't take lightly Larry Flint going in and buying up the L.A. Free Press, or Paul Krasner and The Realist, and trying to buy Mother Jones and the alternative press. I think it's an important strategic move in tying up the sources of information that are getting out. And I'll go into detail, but the cover of the Free Press article says, JFK murder solved, and I don't believe it solved, so we'll continue on that subject next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and I'll be with you next Sunday night, and you take care.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussel.